Twofootedtackle.com.
Welcome to the pod that needs to go four down before it starts getting into gear. Yes, it's Two-Footed Tackle podcast time. Coming up, Tottenham go Baleistic in Milan, but just like the milkman, Rafa delivers. Meanwhile, Wayne Rooney says Manchester United don't match his ambition. The pod asks, will he join up with Crawley, given they've already signed Torres and possibly Pires? Plus, it's So Long Strachan, as well as our usual look at all your favourites, such as MLS and the Premier League, right here on the Two-Footed Tackle podcast. Yes, hello and welcome to the Two-Footed Tackle podcast with me, Gary Andrews. Joining me, as ever, a man who now has two underperforming football teams to fret about. That's after Tooting's midweek stumble. Hello, Chris Nee.
Hi, yeah, thanks for that.
I'm just picking up what you're saying, that the R word was a distinctly possibility for Tooting.
Sadly it is, yeah. They were really disappointing. They played the worst team in the league, who are, you know, the worst team in the league based on some pretty horrible circumstances. And it was a 2-2 draw and they had both goals put on a plate for them. So, pretty worrying times.
So it's a good thing I went to see The Social Network that night.
How was it?
Oh, it was okay. It wasn't too bad. It was a good drama. Felt more like a telly drama.
Was it? I was thinking that's probably about the time I'll bother to watch it.
It's like, if you like The West Wing, obviously it's written by Aaron Sorkin. Yeah. It has that kind of feel to it. So it's, yeah. It's good. This isn't the film podcast, but if you want, we can do a separate film podcast.
How many stars?
3.5. Yeah. 3.5. Maybe 4 if I was feeling really generous. But 3.5.
Get out of bed for 4.5.
Okay. Well, you're a bit like that supermodel then. And
in many ways.
Joining us in the studio, we've got two pod debuts this week, so it's almost like we've had a summer clear out, except that it's October. You know what I mean. Anyway, first up, you've read her Champions League previews on the site each week. You know her love for Arsenal. It's Two-Footed Tackle's Natasha Henry.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, Natasha?
I'm good. I have two words, Jack Wilshere, so I'm continually smiling at the moment.
Excellent. You've not been visited by Jack, then? You just...
No, he's a bit too young for me. I'm 28, so, you know, that's crossing the barrier a bit, but... As football player, great.
Okay, he's legal though.
Just. He's younger than my little brother, so that's where I draw the line.
Have you been tackled by him?
No, but I'm not tall enough. He only goes for really tall people. It's like, so he's like a little axe with a tree knocking them down and everyone's shouting timber in the background. So no, he hasn't tackled me.
For our second pod debut this week, please welcome probably the most musically proficient guest we've ever had in the studio. She's part of the band Paintings of Ships, full-time Middlesbrough fan as well, Catherine Wilson.
Hello, yes.
Hey, how are you doing?
Yeah, it's been quite an interesting week for Middlesbrough, so I'm quite excited to be here to talk about them.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll obviously be talking about those lots in a bit. Okay, right, let's start off with the Champions League. Quite a night in the San Siro. Tottenham Hotspur 4-0 down at half-time, battling back to 4-3, courtesy of a Gareth Bale hat-trick. Now, Tasha, I know you're a gooner, but even you have to be impressed by the Welsh wonder on the wing.
No, he is amazing. And without him last night, Tottenham would have probably been 4-0 down at the end of the match, but I think Inter kind of thought, we're 4-0 up, let's take a breather and relax. He scored 3 times in the exact same spot in the goal from the same position just nearer the goal. But yeah, he's amazing.
Absolutely. And do you think that's... Well, we've got a question here from one of our listeners and occasional podcast, Laura Oliver. She said, has Bale put himself in a shop window regardless of what Harry says?
I don't think so. He's not talking about a move. He's not been at Tottenham long. I think maybe give him another year or two if he's still performing like that. Remember the first 21 games, he didn't win a game for Tottenham. So it's only been like 15, 20 games that he's actually been playing well. So I think give him next season, maybe someone, Chelsea, Arsenal, might come in for him. But yeah, you never know.
I'm genuinely excited as a Welshman about seeing Bale and Ramsey actually together in a midfield.
Oh, Ramsey's back in training now. He went fantastic. Back training last week. He's very happy. Sorry, I read the Arsenal website. And Arsene Wenger said he looks really good. He's come on leaps and bounds in the last month. He might be back for December.
Excellent. Well, that will make myself and Tim Morgan as well, probably the only two Welsh people of any connection to this podcast, very, very happy. Back to Spurs, though. Catherine, were you surprised just how poor they were in the first, well, for the first half?
Not particularly. I think going back to Gareth Bale, he's quite Berbatov-esque in that he sort of seems to pull his socks up for the really big games and and put on these amazing performances, but sort of on the week by week basis, he's not always there. But yeah, I mean, sort of when you have the circumstances as Spurs did to lose your keeper in the first sort of 10 minutes, then you're sort of backed up against the wall. How do you come back from that, really? I think it was a case of nothing to lose, and then I think that probably helped Bale's performance a bit.
Chris, Harry, next England manager.
No, thanks.
Really?
I don't think the FA would have him for reasons we won't go into, but no thanks.
I mean, in terms of tactically, though, I thought that Spurs might well have one of these nights where they would be hideously exposed by a very good European team. And let's face it, some of the stuff Inter were playing in the first half was of a very top quality European team.
Yeah, I think they were exposed completely. The second half for me was a complete freak. Superb to watch, really exciting to watch, and I was really pleased when he scored his third, but it was a freak. That was, for all intents and purposes, an absolute hiding for Spurs, and they've got off pretty lightly by going away with 4-3. And to return to Redknapp, absolutely not. He pretty much, you know, I've been expecting him to cock it up in Europe, and he hasn't really yet for me, but obviously last night, I think, probably wasn't his fault, to be honest. I think the players were just completely cacking themselves when they got onto the pitch.
They looked very overwhelmed.
They were terrified, weren't they?
Yeah, they looked very overwhelmed.
And Inter just came at them, and you're not going to get those circumstances every week. And I'm sure Inter were as surprised as Spurs were after 13 minutes, which is when I turn the TV on. so, yeah, it's Inter are one of the very best sides in Europe. It looked like a fairly respectable result. And they'll move on, and I'm sure Spurs will give them a much better game at White Hart Lane, and I don't think that that's like probably too much to worry about.
I'll tell you what, that Rafa Benitez, he's quite a good manager, isn't he?
Jury's out at Inter for me. He's got to do something really special to put his stamp on that team, because, you know, after a treble winning season, there's not that much more he can do.
Catherine, do you reckon Spurs can get out of the group? Because obviously with 20 and Werder Bremen drawing last night, that gives Spurs a little bit more breathing space after their loss last night.
To be honest, I can see them getting through the group. I think, you know, they can score the goals when they want to, as they've proven. Who knows what would have happened last night if Gomez hadn't been sent off. Could have been a very different outcome, but I'm quite confident they'll get through in that group. Yeah.
Who was taken off?
Modric.
So obviously didn't see the first 10 minutes.
No.
So that's a huge tactical change for Spurs as well then.
Yeah.
It was probably the obvious player to take off,
yeah.
You have to say. Confession to make, at 4-0 I thought it was all over, so I switched over to watch Barcelona against Copenhagen instead. Barca weren't as... Well, as good as they have been, although Messi's goal was first goal was right.
Both second half goals, weren't they?
No, one was the first half.
One
was second half. But yeah, Copenhagen get a very good fight. Slightly concerned for Copenhagen's manager, given that he's had a heart attack, but he was still running, not on there obviously, but he was still running around like an absolute maniac on the touchline, yelling at every single decision. Not quite sure whether that's... also, one of the Copenhagen players looked like he was wearing a hat, but it might have just been a very big headband. moving on to other ones. Natasha, obviously, vested interest in Arsenal against Shakhtar. 5-1 was a scoreline. Does that reflect how good Arsenal was?
I don't think it was how good we were. I think it was how bad Shakhtar were. I think the first half, they looked like they were trying to catch us on the counter. They looked like they were going to bring a game, but then they just capitulated. Very much like Man U against West Brom. But anyway, they just weren't very good. And when they did get into our half of the pitch, they didn't really get in the box. Any shots they had were easy, as you can see, because Fabianski got like 7 out of 10. So he didn't have much work to do. But yeah, I think, you know, it's another good match. 5 players scored. First time in 2 years that's happened in the Champions League. So yeah. Good to see Cesc back.
And Eduardo scoring for Shakhtar as well. Very good reception from the Arsenal fans for that.
Oh, brilliant. I think one of the things you notice about Arsenal fans and Arsenal players is when players leave our club, they never slag it off. You don't have players coming out in the paper saying the manager was this or that, or I didn't like the way the club was organised or anything like that. So Eduardo has a lot of love for Arsenal. We have a lot of love for him. And I think I've never seen a goal being conceded where every Arsenal fan has got up and clapped it, every player's clapped it, even Arsene Wenger was on his feet.
Mm. So 9 points, 3 out of 3. Essentially, you just really need one more win. You're home and dry. Shakhtar, though, is the next game of Shakhtar away. Never an easy place in Arsenal. I haven't got a particularly good record over that area.
No, when we travel them ways, I mean, I'd be happy for a draw there. A 1-1 draw, a 0-0 draw. Don't want to concede too much. But the group, we probably have got the easiest group out of all the English teams. You know, we've got three teams who can't really score, who can't really defend, and who don't have as much experience in the Champions League as some other teams. So, yeah, we've got quite an easy ride to the second round, I think.
Mm. Just leaving the English teams aside for a very brief period. Chris, Roma losing at home to Basel. How long's Ranieri got left? Because that's a very surprising result there. And obviously, domestically, they're quite poor as well.
We could be gone by the time we finish recording. It's difficult to tell. I think Sensi has got some kind of press conference at some point. So obviously crisis talks, but I haven't seen that much pressure on Ranieri himself, but the results just aren't going nowhere at all. They won at the weekend, so they're sort of off the bottom, but it's going to be a really tough few weeks for him, and they really do have to pick it up, because the trouble they've got at the moment is every time they do win, which is twice or something, they've certainly not that many times in the league, they then go and lose. So they beat Inter and then lost to Napoli, and then they won at the weekend and then lost in the Champions League this week at home. So, not so good.
Mm. And the other Italian team, Milan, going down 2-0, Real Madrid. I mean, very, very big game in terms of the two teams on there. Real Madrid, you've got to say, laying down a real marker on that one.
Yeah, I think Milan will be happy to have the return game next, because they are certainly capable of getting revenge.
Okay, moving back to English teams. Tasha, Manchester United got their win that they need over the Turkish team, Bursaspor. Fantastic goal from Nani there. But are they strong enough to be able to compete beyond the group stages?
I don't think they are. I watched them and Bursaspor weren't bad, but Man U's experience kind of took them through. Obviously, they're used to Champion League games. You know, they're obviously fitter players. They're playing a better league. And I think, bar Nani's wonder goal, Berbatov didn't look too good. He did play. He came off and hit the bar, didn't he? Yeah, Berbatov didn't look too good. No one else looked like they could do anything other than Nani. So I do think Alex Ferguson's got stuff to worry about.
Mm. The other game you caught highlights of, at any rate. You said you were very impressed with Cluj against Bayern.
Yeah, I just think, kind of in the manner of a German team, they've got that kind of, we know exactly what we're doing, we know everyone's job. Don't get me wrong, they conceded 2 own goals, but I think that was more through exuberance and lack of experience than the like Rangers, where he headed it into the bottom corner of the net. So yeah, I think they've impressed me. They've not done bad, and they're third in the group, so they could do a job in the Europa League, definitely.
We've missed out Chelsea, really. And I guess there's not really much to say. That was a very routine victory for them.
Yeah, again, like us, they have quite a good group. You're not expecting them not to come out of the group first place, so anything less is really disappointing. But yeah, Nelka looks happy for the first time in how many years. He obviously likes playing up front by himself, because when Drogba plays, he doesn't score as much. But yeah, I think they'll be happy to have Frank Lampard back for the knockout stages, though.
Mm. And Chris, Rangers are doing particularly well. They're doing a lot better than you thought. I mean, I don't know if you saw the highlights. They could have easily won that game. They missed a whole host of
should have won it.
Open goals. Yeah. But you know, I think we both almost wrote them off. Said, you know, look at that group. You know, they'll be lucky if they avoid finishing bottom. And hey, they've come out with some very good results.
They have. Yeah. They completely should have won it. Maurice Adu had a hell of a game, scoring. At the same end twice, I think it was. And then hit the post for Kenny Miller's chance that he should have put away. And who was the other one? Same sort of chance, open goal, quite narrow angle. There was another.
Smith.
It was two chances that they absolutely have to put away. But despite that, you know, they've gone into that game against a very good side, not just set up to defend, and got a decent result out of it, and they're second in the group. So it's all shaping up rather nicely for them, but they've got tough games ahead.
Mm, I guess the away trip at Valencia is probably their key game in that group.
Yeah. certainly is, and home to United is going to be no easy ride either.
Absolutely. If you're talking about missed goals, don't know if you saw the highlights from Barcelona Copenhagen. I've forgotten the name of the Copenhagen striker, but he had to, all he had to do was head into an empty net for an equaliser after shot had crashed off the bar, and he managed to head wide from about 5 yards, and actually he put a lot of directional effort into it as well. He also did a really bizarre thing. He was set free in the first half and actually pulled up because he thought he was offside after running about half the length of one of the halves of the pitches. It was quite impressive stuff. Before we round up for the Champions League, I'll just sum up in one word from Zonal Marking on Twitter about Panathinaikos Ruben Kazan, which was Christ. Apparently one of the worst games, I was talking, he said one of the worst games he's ever seen. So that's quite something. Anyway, we'll leave it there for part one. Fairly exhausting, so put your feet up, stick the kettle on, grab a biscuit and prepare for goal scoring keepers and angry Scotsmen in part two. Welcome back to part two of the Two Footed Tackle podcast, and it's MLS time. Now, Chris, if Fergie's looking for a replacement striker at Manchester United, he could do worse than Columbus Crew's goalkeeper.
Yes, let's not go overboard. Will Hesmer came up for a late corner and scored. And it was a nice goal as well. He was given all the time in the world, but he took it down and he was very composed. Have you seen the goal?
I have, yes.
Really composed, wasn't it?
Yeah,
a bit of a scruffy finish.
He took his time. He almost, like, the first touch was just like, I'm a goalkeeper, I'm in the penalty area, yeah. What do I do here?
I think that's what the defenders were thinking as well. They just didn't close him down at all.
Second goalkeeper ever to score in the history of the MLS?
Yep. Oh, after Danny Sapero.
Who?
New York.
Okay.
Against Columbus, I believe.
Oh,
with,
okay.
I think Hesmer was injured at the time, or suspended or something. He didn't play, but he was at the club. He was the first choice, I think.
Okay.
There you go.
Lots of Columbus stuff. I mean, it's coming into the penultimate weekend. It's now all sorted to a certain extent.
Pretty much.
Up the top of the table. Just fill us in what's going on in the race for the playoffs.
Right. So all that's happened in the last couple of weeks is that the Wizards have failed in their quest to win all the points in the world while the Rapids lose all the points in the world. So as it happens, Kansas won their first game last week and then lost to the Revs, and Colorado went to LA and won anyway, so that in the end has been pretty comfortable. So there's some room for manoeuvre in terms of who plays who in the final eight, but all that's left to settle in this final weekend coming up is who wins Supporters Shield.
And that's, well, the games that matter are Galaxy against Dallas and the Rapids against Salt Lake. Now, Galaxy went down to the Rapids in the last weekend. So have they got what it takes? Because I know we've talked about how good Dallas are as a team on the day.
Yeah, Dallas were finally beaten, though, after 19 games without losing. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they react to that, because they haven't lost for a while. And going to LA, despite what the Rapids did, is a really tough ask for anybody. So LA certainly have what it takes. Whether they put it into practice and whether they're really bothered about Supporters Shield remains to be seen. RSL certainly do. And to be honest, I quite fancy it to go their way, despite being a point behind.
And we've talked about sort of how inconsistent MLS can be and how many sort of different teams can be up or thereabouts. But this is, these are the same two that competed the final last season. Do you think we're actually now starting to see a bit of legacy and a bit of stability coming in for the big teams in MLS?
Well, it could be. And the fact that they can now have three designated players and the salary cap's just getting ever so slightly bigger every season, it supposedly means the end of parity. But Real Salt Lake don't play with a designated player. And they've consistently, over the last year, been one of the better teams in the league. So, I mean, that, for me, largely comes down to having an excellent coach who's probably got the US job in his future somewhere. But, yeah, the fact that there is going to be legacy is almost certainly true. The Red Bulls are going to do well in the future. Galaxy will do well in the future. And anybody else who's willing to invest in those two or three designated players each is going to have the edge over teams that don't have the money to do so. So parity is dying.
Quick mention for the Red Bulls, though, losing to the Union.
Yes. Union haven't had a very good season at all in their first season, apart from a few bright spots. But they went 2-0 against the Red Bulls. And I think, really, to be honest, you go 2-0 down at this stage of the season, you're already in the playoffs. You don't really give it your all to get back in, because it almost doesn't matter. they were never going to win Supporters Shield, and that's pretty much all there is left to play for them, apart from momentum, which I think is going to be important, but I doubt all the coaches in that top eight do.
Of course, going into the final weekend, there's also another thing up for grabs, the Golden Boot.
The Golden Boot, which is... seemed to have been run away with slightly by Edson Buddle lately, because he had a blistering start to the season, and he's been, you know, knocking him in slightly under the radar for the last few weeks, and he's just pulled away from Sebastian Letoux and Chris Wondolowski and Juan Pablo Angel. But last night the Earthquakes played and Wondo got a hat-trick, and he's now level with Buddle on 17 goals for the season, so it's going to be very tight there as well.
Have the Earthquakes not got a game in the final round? It doesn't look like
away at Kansas City.
Away at Kansas. Ah, sorry, missed that on there. So, another chance for Wondo to actually get on the score sheet. Galaxy have a tough game against Dallas. Would you fancy Wondo for the Golden Boot, or do you think it's going to be Buddles?
I think it entirely comes down to which of the teams has a better final day, and which gets further in the playoffs. I'm not sure if they probably do count the playoffs, possibly. But yeah, I think Buddle's probably more consistent in front of goal, but Wondolowski's playing so far ahead of himself at the moment. He's probably not one of the absolute best forwards and midfielders that they have in the US, but he's just having one of those seasons, and he's got to be an absolute shoo-in to be as shortlisted as MVP as well.
And then, of course, last day of the season, saying goodbye to a legend of MLS. And that's not an understatement, is it, Chris?
No. Have a sip of water there. It's not an understatement at all, because, you know, MLS has been around for less than 2 decades. It doesn't have that much history to it. But someone who's been there almost since the beginning is Jaime Moreno, who's spent almost all of that time at DC United. And he is equal top scorer of all time in MLS, only just equaled, I think, this month by Jeff Cunningham. And he's got all sorts of records. He was like one of the first players to get 100 goals and 100 assists in MLS. And he's very, very popular with the DC United supporters. So it's going to be a shame to see him go. He's very obviously been on a decline for the last couple of years that I've been watching DC United closely. But one of the best players the league's ever had, obviously one of the best goal scorers, one of the cleverest footballers they've had in the league, and a real credit to Bolivian football. So really sad to see him go. I've enjoyed writing about him for the last week or so, and I believe that one of his former clubs might be a little bit later on the agenda.
Does Catherine, as a Borough supporter, obviously Moreno was on Teesside for a little bit. Does Chris's description of Moreno that he's just read out there, does that tally with your memories of him at all?
Well, a bit of an unlikely hero, I suppose. When he was with us, he was sort of more of a bit player, sort of in the 90s. At that era, we were quite a workmanlike squad.
So he's top scorer for the reserves one season or something ridiculous.
Well, yeah, he probably was. sort of before the heyday of Ravanelli and Janino, that was when Moreno was around, and he sort of left to quite a little fanfare, really. But he's, you know, he's really made a name for himself over there, and sort of won Beckham-esque praise.
He spanned Ayrton Park and the Riverside. That's the sort of time he was there.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, he was one of the first players to go over there and sort of do that. And now look at the MLS.
I wondered if it was the same player when I first saw his name crop up when we were doing MLS, simply because I remember signing him on Championship Manager 2.
We'd lost the bad mullet.
They didn't have pictures on back in them days on Championship Manager. Okay, well, let's leave the MLS and make the opposite journey to Moreno from the States to Teesside, where Gordon Strachan resigned from the Middlesbrough job almost a year after arriving at the Riverside. Catherine, as a Borough fan, were you sorry to see Wee Gordon go?
Actually, I was. It's been a very strange couple of seasons for me personally as a Borough fan. We're quite used to, sort of stability, really. You know, we don't really sack managers, but whoever comes in next is going to be the third manager in 2 seasons. When we got Strachan in, I was quite positive about it, and I thought he would really sort of take the team by the scruff of the neck. Really shake us up, which he obviously has done. He's changed the team in a big way, but I think really his position was sort of left untenable, and fair play to him, he went in and tore up his contract, which is incredibly gentlemanly for a club like ours, who would be in big trouble if we had to pay out that sort of level of compensation, as well as find someone new.
I saw one Borough fan, I can't remember who this was actually, but I was reading around before this, who said that, in their opinion, the rot with managerial set in when McLaren was replaced with Southgate. Now, do you go along with that? Because Southgate was sacked when Borough were in a very good position in the championship.
Yeah, it was very strange. Southgate came in off the back of McLaren, who was actually, during his time at Borough, just, you know, much maligned. Nobody had a good word to say about him. And now we look back and we think, well, you know, we were in the UEFA Cup final and we were doing really well in the Premier League. And we won the Carling Cup. It's quite depressing looking back now. But Southgate came in and obviously very inexperienced. It was a big step up to go from the dressing room to be managing some of the players who were still in the team. And he did try to make it his own. He was sort of trying to bring through a lot of the younger players from the academy. But I think, you know, I think we did sort of fall off a bit there. Obviously, we got relegated, and Gibson sort of said that Southgate was the man who could bring us back up, start again. And who knows what would have happened if he had have kept him on. I think a lot of people were calling for his head, despite us being, you know...
Yeah, but there's people calling for Arsene Wenger's head.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, sort of 10 years ago, I don't think this sort of bane for blood would have been as heavy as it is now, but... Yeah, I think after McLaren, maybe Southgate wasn't the right man for us. But I think back then there was a lot less choice. You know, reading the blogs today, reading local newspaper websites, there's just names everywhere. Could be anybody.
What about the squad that whoever comes in has to inherit? Because Strachan's piled it with a lot of Scottish players from the Scottish Premier League, which doesn't seem to have worked. Do you think it's just the fact of Strachan's management style, or is it that the players he signed aren't good enough?
Yeah, obviously when we got relegated we had to sell people, and since then we've lost sort of our big players. Adam Johnson doing very well now, and also Stuart Downing. But Strachan seemed to have shied away from Southgate's youth team focus and youth players, and he's tried to bring in some more experienced hands, obviously a lot of them from the SPL. I think 7 or 8 players he's brought in who do have a lot of experience, and most of them have quite good records in the SPL, but that somehow hasn't really transferred to the Championship, which I think has been quite interesting for a lot of people to see if that project would work, and it hasn't.
And in terms of who you would like in, I guess that's the obvious next question. Mm. As you say, so many names have been mentioned for this. Who would be your choice?
Oh, well, my heart said Tony Mowbray straight away. I got quite excited about that. But then there's the whole, I think in the past Middlesbrough have done that. They got Willie Madron in as a manager, and he was such a loved player, and it went a bit wrong. And I think that happens a lot in football. I think Steve Gibson's definitely going to take his time with this one. We've got Steve Agnew in charge at the minute, just as an interim manager. But the names that are cropping up, I mean, today I saw Gary Neville, which beggars belief, really. But Ronald Koeman from AZ Alkmaar, he ruled himself out in spectacular fashion today.
How spectacular? I haven't seen or heard this.
He just said, yes, I would love to move to a big club with big ambitions, but not Middlesbrough.
Yeah, I would love to manage in England, but not Middlesbrough.
But there are a lot of managers with Premiership experience, sort of Alan Kirbishley, Gary Megson, who I'm a bit scared of. People like that are getting mentioned. The list is huge, but I can actually see Strachan going for somebody a bit more off the radar. Sorry, not Strachan, Steve Gibson going for somebody a bit more off the radar. When we got Steve McLaren in, nobody expected that really, and that was sort of, I think we pulled him in at the right time. He was ready to take that challenge on, and we sort of caught him on the rise before his England escapades. So hopefully, you know, it's a really, really big choice. You know, the parachute payments are getting less and less each year for us. We don't have a lot of money. We've got terrible attendances, so, you know, he's got to make the right call this time.
Hands off Paul Tisdale. You cannot have him.
I was going to say Martin O'Neill till you mentioned there wasn't any money.
Oh, that's a pipe dream.
Tasha, as a neutral observer, what do you make of the Middlesbrough situation?
I was surprised when Gibson got rid of Southgate, because I remember I used to watch Middlesbrough quite a bit when I lived up north, and he was always one of the most sensible chairmen in the Premier League. You know, he's supported his clubs growing up that way. He gives managers time. And Southgate didn't have a bad record. His win percentage was like 29%. He got rid of him when they were fourth in the table, which is just ludicrous when you think about it.
We just won away from home as well, and then he got called in to be chopped.
It's like getting your boss the biggest deal ever and then him sacking you the next day. It doesn't kind of make sense. I think with Gordon Strachan, the problem is, though, Gordon Strachan is a very headstrong manager, from what you see in the press and what you read in the press. And I think for him, he's come to Borough and it's like he's taken the engine out of the car he used to drive and tried to put it in his new car, and it doesn't really work. He's got two teams as opposed to just one. I think that's where the problem... There seems to be more of a division within the squad. You've got the Scottish players, then you've got the players that were there before, then you've got the other new guys that don't know the history. But, respect to him for ripping up his contract. I think that shows a lot about the man, although I'm not his biggest fan. But, yeah, I think that says a lot about him.
He saved us a potentially pretty ugly press sacking as well, hasn't he, really? Because they are really going for him.
Oh, he's not well liked because of his smart comments, is he?
Well, they're not smart. They're more. I think they're rude. I think Arsene Wenger is smart. He says things to insult you, but they're so smart. It's like when he said to Alex Ferguson, "Everyone thinks they have the most beautiful wife at home." It's rude, but it's said so intelligently, you can't say it's out and out rude. Whereas Gordon Strachan is just a bit rude. He's the sort of person you meet in the pub on a Friday night who. He just gets a bit angry sometimes. He needs to calm down.
Yeah, I think he'd done a lot to annoy the fans with his comments about going home and taking drugs and getting drunk. You know, the attendances are at an all-time low at the Riverside now, and, you know, people just aren't going to come back until there's change. So I think, you know, Gibson had to do something.
I think that affects it, though. You know, if you have a manager that doesn't have a nice personality, the fans are less likely to go. The ones who aren't, you know, really, really big fans, they're going to think, well, I don't like the manager. You know, I'm not going to enjoy the game. I'm not going to bother spending my 25, 30. I don't know what your tickets are in Middlesbrough.
It's like 26 quid.
Which is a lot of money for a town where people are losing their jobs quite
exactly.
often.
Exactly. I think if they cut the prices to match the standards of the football that we've been seeing this season, then it might sort of improve the attendances. But, yeah.
Chris, it's another sacking, or not sacking, resignation, but it's another managerial casualty this season. We're already starting to see quite a few of them. It's a few months in. We've talked about Paulo Sousa in the past as well. At Leicester, there's other ones down the pyramid. Simon Davy just with a few weeks in at Hereford as well. Do you think chairmen still aren't learning? You know, it's still too early. Or do you think, you know, in the cases of, say, Leicester, Hereford, Middlesbrough, that they are justified in doing something?
I sort of wasn't really surprised about Strachan, so I suppose you could see that if I were the chairman, it would probably have been on my mind as well. Although, you know, obviously it's a resignation and not a sacking, of course.
Mutual.
But yeah, I mean, Simon Davy wasn't doing anything down there, was he? Just not surprised to see him go. But as a rule, you know, I don't think the chairman, they don't particularly learn about this, and the results do have to be absolutely instant. But I've always felt there's an argument for the, when you get pointed towards stability, stability with the wrong manager is no better than chucking managers out every 6 months. So I always find that to be a bit of a strange argument. But in Gareth Southgate's case, I think, you know, stability might have been worthwhile there. So it's definitely one to look at on a case by case basis. But as a rule, managers get a lot less time, and sometimes I think it's justified.
Did you see Flavio Briatore's comments today at all? He said that if QPR get to the Premier League, he would dream for Lippi to be the coach, which I'm sure must have gone down very well with Neil Warnock.
Yeah, I did think that actually. And if you're going to get your manager annoyed, probably best it isn't Warnock.
He's another angry man.
he's an interesting one, is Warnock. He's grown on me a lot.
Like fungus?
I really like him.
I should.
Old Colin. Yeah, but only because he's such a horrible, obnoxious man, and we've got no characters left in football.
Okay, do you like Sam Allardyce?
No.
oh, okay, that's interesting. No, I don't like that Sam either.
No, I shouldn't like Warnock, given that he used to manage that green team down the road. But he's grown on me. And plus, you can't deny, I think he is genuinely quite a good manager.
He's at his level at the moment, isn't he? He is definitely one of the very best at getting teams out of that division.
If he's got players to play ball, then he's a good manager. But if he's got players that want to stand up and have their own opinion, I don't see him. I can't see him in the Premiership with a couple of international players who want to have an opinion and want to say what they think. You know,
I think
his
strength
long.
Is getting promotion out of the Championship.
You know, he nearly took the Chelsea job. This was pre-Ranieri days. He was actually, I think he might have been offered, or he was definitely interviewed and was very close to going to Chelsea, which would have made things very interesting.
Incredibly, yeah.
In the history of the Premier League.
I'm in shock.
Just getting back briefly to the Championship before we wrap up this part. Catherine, how can you see Middlesbrough doing over the course of the season?
Oh, well, I've obviously been spending a fair bit of time on the message boards for the Middlesbrough site. A lot of people are just saying, basically, our season is over now. I'm not sure if that's entirely true, but I think, you know, to see a good run of results and for us to finish mid-table would be a very successful season after what's happened so far. I think that's probably all we can hope for. But you do never know in the Championship, obviously. The points margin is incredibly tight, from the sort of playoff places to the middle of the bottom half of the league. There's about 10 points in it, I think. So, who knows? I mean, it depends. I sort of agree with what you said about the stability. I mean, we could bring somebody in who'll get instant results for, you know, until Christmas. But then, what after that? You know, you've got to look to the long term, I think, for a club like Middlesbrough. And I think that's what Gibson will do.
Football management consultant Ian Dowie is probably available.
Thank you.
Has Phil Brown not come out and said that he's been offered the job yet? Because, you know, Phil Brown gets offered every job.
No, I think Phil Brown would like to get offered every job.
I know, but it's always him coming out. And I'm sorry, how can you be that orange yet not use the sunbed? Sorry, very girly comment, but it has to be said.
Martin's been touted as well, not for the Borough job, but there was a story about him in Kiev. And they've come out and said, nope, sorry, don't know anything about it.
Was this a bit like before Mancini got the Manchester City job?
Yeah, it's going that way. Obviously, I'm not going to say anything about the man in question because he's notoriously litigious. But yeah, it's taking that sort of direction. Yeah. Hmm? Mancini applying for every single job in English football because he's such an Anglophile.
He certainly landed on his feet. Okay, well, like Strachan at Borough, we're finished with part two. Stay tuned to part three. We fly into the Premier League. Welcome back. Part three of the Two Footed Tackle podcast. Chris, I've got a question for you.
Hooray.
Robert Pires to Crawley. What on earth is going on there?
I know what all of those words mean, but I've never heard them in the same sentence before. Yes, Crawley, who we've mentioned quite a lot, are apparently going to be entering talks with Robert Pires, who is without a club at the moment, but is a rather famous and well-liked footballer, going to a team that isn't even top of its division in the Conference Premier. So, possibly money-motivated.
Yeah, and Crawley do seem to have a lot of it flying around.
They do seem to have a lot of it flying around, you're right.
They do have a Torres there.
They do.
Yes. Sergio Torres,
the only man I've ever wolf whistled on a football pitch.
Really?
Yeah, when he was playing for Wickham.
Why did you wolf whistle him?
Not just me, and like thousands of Villa.
I was just thinking that you're just standing there. I thought this was a different
brilliant.
Side.
It was the most targeted and unfair criticism of a player based on physical appearance I've ever experienced.
Okay, did he dive for locks? I know he does in the conference.
Oh, he didn't get a ball. Okay. We battered them in the second half of that game.
Okay, fair enough. I guess Pires has got an airport very close to him if he does want to escape.
Handy, yep, if he wants to escape with a suitcase full of money. Okay. I don't think he'll go there. I think he'd be absolutely ludicrous to make that transfer. I think it's probably a little bit of a publicity stunt, as we've just been discussing off air. But I think there is also the intention on Crawley's part of getting him. I think he might be a little bit deluded. I hope it is.
Because, players like that, when you have a big-name player drop down the levels, and unless they're a player who's come up from that level, like, say, Windass, who has been sort of playing a few non-league games in recent weeks.
He's off Scarborough Athletic.
Yes, he has. He has. and you've got, another big-name player, reasonably for that level. And, you know, Stephen Moore is now at St Neots Town.
Yeah, he left his previous club in acrimonious circumstances, I seem to remember.
Mm. But you have sort of the bigger name players when they drop down to that level. You've seen Merson did it at the end of his career as well. It never seems to work out very well, does it?
No, it's almost a completely different situation as well. And, you know, some of those players have a natural drop down from there. But you think Pires probably, even at his age, can get a much better club than that.
Oh, he issued a come and get me plea to Leicester.
Okay, no, I retract Villa. My previous statement.
To Villa.
Okay.
French boss, you know.
Yeah.
Chris, with mustering all the enthusiasm that you did.
All the enthusiasm that I say for Villa these days. I think it's such a bizarre thing, and it's mainly because it's Crawley. You know, it's not even one of the big, you know, recent ex-league clubs that's gone down and retains huge crowds and so on. It's Crawley, who are just setting themselves up week after week to be utterly hated by the whole of the rest of the non-league pyramid and most league supporters as well. So this really isn't going to help.
Hopefully I might be bumping into Caroline Barker this weekend. So if I do, I will ask her.
I'm sure she'll have plenty to say about
what she knows is going on down there. Okay, right. Let's go to the Premier League. Now, despite our best trying not to go overboard on Liverpool this week, as we seem to have done for the last couple of weeks, it's still a very obvious place to start. Catherine, after finally getting rid of Hicks and Gillette, the euphoria after the court case, they were brought back down to earth with a bump at Everton.
Yes, it must have been a brilliant day for an Everton fan on Sunday. I watched the game after watching Middlesbrough against Leeds on Saturday, so it was quite a nice game for a neutral fan. Two brilliant goals. Everton just completely bossed it, embarrassed Liverpool, and yeah, but obviously Roy was happy, so what more to say?
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be very bizarre, and a lot of people seem to have picked up on that Hodgson said that was the best they played, yet the general consensus is that was probably one of the worst performances, especially given the Derby day.
Exactly. I'm not sure what's going on with Roy, really. Is he trying to just sort of keep his head above water? And obviously, all of the court case stuff that's going on is going to be a bit unsettling, but, you know, they've got a lot of brilliant players, and I don't really know. I think it's a bit of a come down for them. Maybe a bad managerial choice, as we were discussing earlier.
Too good to go down, to use the cliche?
I don't think anybody's too good to go down. Not these days.
That's a very good answer. And credit to Everton, though, you have to say. I mean, they, definitely, after a very poor start, do you think that they're now going to be climbing up? That will give them something to build on to push for Europe?
Yeah, I watched Everton quite a lot last season, and I did feel sorry for them. They had so many injury problems, but there was a lot of promise, and I think that this year, you know, they could really make good on that. I was quite impressed with the performance on Sunday.
Mm. Yeah. Game that there's not an awful lot to say about. Villa 0, Chelsea 0. Or is there, Chris?
Well, obviously not that much goalmouth action, but it was sort of an engaging game. It was okay. We had the three best chances of the match, four probably. Stephen Ireland and John Carew both should have scored in the first 10 minutes, and then Nigel Riakoka fluffed the shot more badly than I've seen a shot fluffed ever, right at the death. Kieran Clarke hit the post. I think they hit the woodwork a couple of times down the other end as well. But I think we pretty much shaded it, to be honest. I think Chelsea weren't at their best at all, obviously missing Drogba, but Anelka just couldn't get a handle on it. And all in all, it was a deserved point for Villa, and I think that a lot of us came away from the ground disappointed not to have more.
Rare feeling, I guess, against Chelsea.
Yeah, it is a little bit, but we've got a very good record against them at Villa Park, so we beat them there quite a lot. But it's Villa fans are disappointed at the slightest thing. Feeling that we deserve 3 points and not getting it is enough to set us all off at once.
Mm. I saw the second half and I thought you were much better. I would have seen the first half, but there are no pubs that show football in Kingston.
No, I went to the game at Tooting with Jamie Cutteries this week, and I've heard all about it.
Yeah, for listeners who want to be filled in on this, not less than stellar anecdote, I'd been down with Jamie at AFC Wimbledon on Saturday, and we went into Kingston to try and find a game to watch, and I think we spent most of the first half wandering the streets of Kingston looking for a pub that was showing football, which was incredible. They had rugby on there, but no football.
It's your first time in Kingston, wasn't it?
It was, but this is Chelsea playing.
There you go.
Don't get me wrong, I thought it was a lovely area.
Yeah, it's lovely. No, it's a lovely place to take your mum for dinner on a nice Sunday afternoon, but it's not exactly a place to go and watch football at midday on Saturday.
I'm learning that. It would have been fine, but the Wimbledon bar were closing at 6 o'clock, so weren't showing the game, which was rather upsetting.
It was amazing for somebody. I haven't seen Villa that much on the Hoodier yet, and we look like a different team. And yeah, we've still got a lot of the same problems as we had before. But suddenly the players aren't scared of having the ball. They seem to know what to do with it. They suddenly can control it. So it's pretty encouraging, really.
Definitely. I'm going to leave one obvious team to the very end, because I think we'll have a lot to say about them from one person in the studio. But Tasha, Manchester United, West Brom, more points dropped. Manchester United 2-0 up, you thought home and dry. We've been talking so many times on this pod about how poor Manchester United have been this season. How much do you think the Rooney thing's affected them?
Of course it affects you. You know, if somebody's part of your first team, an integral part of your first team, and all the rumours. But I think it's not so much how bad Man United are, it's how good some of the other teams have been. I saw West Brom play Arsenal, which of course they beat us. Less said about that, the better. But Roberto Di Matteo, he has a very Arsene Wenger way of playing football. He likes to keep the ball down. He's not playing the long ball. His players like to have time in the ball. They can tackle. He's brought Paul Shawner in from Wigan, who again is quite a good acquisition for a club that's just come up. So I don't think it's so much that Man U are bad. It's that everyone else is better, or that knows how to play better against them to try and get a point.
They're not so intimidating as they have been over recent seasons to me, though.
No, I don't. I think people are more scared to go to Chelsea now than they are Manchester United. I think if you don't see Rooney or Ferdinand or Van der Sar on the team sheet, you're thinking, OK, we've got a chance for a point here. Whereas when you go to Chelsea, you're automatically thinking, OK, if we keep a clean sheet, that's a bonus. Or if we only concede two goals, that's a bonus.
Briefly on Rooney, because there's been so much said, and frankly it does bore me a little bit, this, but what's your take on it?
My take is Alex Ferguson's let the cat out of the bag that he's going to be leaving in the near 2.5 years, and that's where it's all come from. Reading the press, Rooney's press conference, and it just didn't sit right with me. He paid a lot of attention to Alex Ferguson's time at Man U rather than Alex Ferguson, the man. I just think there's a lot more to come, but I don't like the way Rooney's gone about it, and it just reminds you there's no loyalty in football. But Alex Ferguson should remember who taught Rooney how to engineer and move away from a club in the first place.
Very true. Ian Holloway had something to say about it earlier.
Well, Ian Holloway, you know, he's Ian Holloway, isn't he? It's like it's Neil Warnock, but Ian Holloway's very passionate. He loves football, and I don't personally, I agree with some of his comments, but I don't think Alex Ferguson's completely as innocent as Ian Holloway would like to think.
I would like to still carry on the campaign, even though I'm not that interested in England. If the Ian Holloway for England campaign, I am entirely, entirely serious about this. Where next? Catherine, Newcastle.
Yeah, Charles Nzogbe's return. Two awesome goals. He absolutely sort of played out of his skin. Which he doesn't do very often, but obviously a lot to prove to the Newcastle fans after his incidents with Joe Kinnear, much to everyone's amusement at the time. But fair play to Newcastle, they did pull it back. I know the Toon Army wouldn't have been too happy losing 2-0 at home to Wigan, so two late goals. Newcastle, they're not doing brilliantly, but they're doing better than Middlesbrough, so I think they're going to be fine this season, to be honest. I think they'll stay up, and then, you know, next season they'll probably have some money to spend. I know this season it was a bit bare bones, but I think next year they'll be able to establish themselves again, back to the big club that they think they are. Well, they probably are. Not bitter at all.
Chris, last week you said Bolton Stoke was a game you were looking forward to.
I was.
Oh,
and?
Yeah.
I think I was justified.
I agree with you.
What a dramatic game. Come on. Superb.
I only saw the highlights. But yes.
Great goal from Chung Yong Lee.
Yes, that's true.
Krasnic scores in the last minute and gets sent off. With two purple offences, pretty much also in the last minute. Fantastic.
Mm.
That's about it, really. But it was I enjoyed the 3 minutes that Match of the Day gave it.
Brilliant. Good win, though, for Bolton.
Yeah, fantastic win. I think, you know, Stoke are no mugs. And they're going to be difficult for pretty much everyone who comes across them this year. They will be beaten a lot. They will probably finish somewhere around the sort of bottom six or seven. But they won't give anybody
Stoke,
an easy game.
Really? You think they'll finish that low?
I reckon so. They haven't started well, have they, particularly?
I know, but I never believed the first 10 games of the season. I think it was completely irrelevant.
Apart from the 30 points, you mean?
I think Stoke have got something. You know,
I like
Stoke. They always score, even if they lose.
Great football sometimes.
Yeah.
I can see them being
quite
more
solid.
Like 11th, 12th than 16th, 17th.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You said bottom six. So that's
I'm just making a prediction, but we are terrible at predictions.
Don't listen to him. He's made a lot of money on individual score predictions.
Yeah,
I wasn't very good last week on the individual score, so less said about that, the better.
I don't think they're going to do as well as they did last year, but I don't think they're going to take too many hidings either.
Mm.
So, any win for a team that's going to be in and around them is a pretty good win.
Who wants to pick up on Blackpool-Manchester City? Because that was, well, again, we say this most weeks, but credit to Blackpool. Natasha, I'll throw that one to you, because, I mean, how... I guess Blackpool might be thinking they're unlucky not to get at least a point out of that.
Oh, without a doubt, as we saw, Ian Holloway was, energetic in front of the cameras again at the weekend. I think Man City, though, the problem is they're starting to maybe believe their own hype a little. They get 2-3 goals up and then they think, oh, okay, we're Man City. And they get a bit lazy. I haven't been impressed with their defence at all. I mean, Toure, who used to play for Arsenal, has suddenly forgotten how to defend. And other than Tevez and Adam Johnson, obviously, no one's really standing out on the pitch. I think they'll do well, but come the end of the season, they might not be as high as they could, as they would like to be, really.
Mm, definitely. I'll just say it again. Ian Holloway for England. I'm not going to... Do you think, though, for Manchester City, it's a game that perhaps in previous seasons they might have drawn or lost?
Yeah. Possibly, but I think it's worse in the way that even though they didn't lose it, they conceded after they were 3-0. Were they 3-0 up or 1-0 up?
They were
1-0 up.
Yeah, they certainly weren't 3-0 up.
They gave Blackpool the chance, and I think that's what would worry them more. You know, that the fact that a couple of the goals were by their mistakes, by not closing players down, not chasing back after you've lost the ball. I think that will worry Mancini more.
Mm.
That and that he might get sacked anytime soon.
I think he might be worried by the fact that he spent the best part of £30 million and Stephen Ireland on Barry and Milner.
Bitterness there? No, I think you might have
not at all.
Well, I like James Milner. I've got no time for Gareth Barry, but I like Milner. But £16 million plus Ireland is ludicrous money for him.
Mm. There's very, very little to say about Blackburn-Sunderland, but Catherine, how do you think Sunderland will do this season? Because they seem to be stuck in a little bit of inertia.
Well, last season, actually, they were quite, for spells of the season at least, they were quite exciting to watch. I'm quite a big Darren Bent fan, actually, and when he felt like it, he was incredible, and they had some good results last season. But it's very much peaks and troughs with Sunderland, and the sort of lounging in the bottom half of the bottom half with Newcastle at the minute. A Monday night game against Blackburn away from home, I couldn't really see them picking up any points, and as predicted, it was quite an unattractive game.
Mm. Do you think this is more of a general question, but I know you said that you're quite a fan of Stoke, but then you've got Blackburn and Sunderland as well, who can play some quite negative stuff. Do you think that the likes of Bruce Allardyce and Pulis should look at what Di Matteo and Holloway have done with their sides? Because you've got lovely passing football and they've got results.
Exactly. You'd think so, but I think people like Steve Bruce are sort of very stuck in their ways. They've had some level of success playing in that style before. I don't know if they would be wanting to change that now. But it's good for just the neutral when these teams are pitched against each other that we don't have a Premier League full of teams who are trying to pass the ball around but are not very good at doing it. I think it's quite good that we've got the clashes of style still in there.
Amen to that. Chris, just to briefly round up some of the other results. Wolves and West Ham getting a point apiece down at the bottom there. Doesn't really do anybody any favours, does it?
No, it doesn't. They both look in real trouble. And I'm a little bit surprised about Wolves, actually, because I thought they did pretty well last season. I thought that they would probably improve on that just a little bit this year. But no, if they're going to be drawing with each other, I think we can probably say goodbye to both of them.
Mm. Did you hear what Mick McCarthy said to Wantaway defender Jelly Van Dam? He just basically said, get on with it. In a very northern accent as well. And then Fulham against Spurs as well. I actually thought Fulham might get something out of this one. But Spurs...
I believe I said Spurs would have just too much.
Yeah, you did. Mm. And you were proven right on this one. Again.
The goal that maybe shouldn't have been a goal.
Definitely shouldn't have been a goal.
I know. This is the problem, though.
Not rules, even question.
The rules state, according to Gary Lineker, that it was a goal. But everyone I've spoke to, every player, every TV programme I've watched has said it wasn't a goal from the time Gallus has attempted to attack the ball. Surely he's interfering.
I think anybody, if he was standing there, it should be offside,
yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah.
But even so, yeah, he tried to play the ball, yeah. So it shouldn't even missed. Have been questioned.
I think it was Brian Clough who said, if he isn't interfering with play, then what the hell is he doing?
Exactly.
Very true.
So let's come to the last side that we haven't mentioned yet this weekend, and start off with Arsenal-Birmingham. We took a little bit more into the Gunners, because you're in today, Tasha. Well, I've got to ask, though, Chamakh, was that a penalty, or was that...
No, it wasn't a penalty. Well, OK, he dived. I'll admit he dived, or he made his way to the floor very quickly. But at the same point, the player shouldn't have put himself in a position where Chamakh could throw himself on the floor and claim the penalty. Sorry, but I'll be honest. And yes, it was a red card.
Mm. do you think... and Wenger has come out, and Wilshere's apologised as well. Do you think Wenger's kind of made a little bit of a rod for his own back? If you do get a tackle like Wilshere, which... any team is capable of, let's face it, you know, it's not sort of... Arsenal have done it in the past, United do them as well. Do you think now that he's said about all the tackling, that when you get a tackle like that, that he's going to be picked on a lot more?
I get why the media pick on him, but you have to look at it in a bigger context. He's saying we get yellow cards. Like, if you look at the Fair Play League, he made a good point in saying it doesn't tell you how many of those yellow cards were for ignoring the referee or kicking the ball away. What he's saying is we don't get regularly yellow and red cards for those sort of tackles. Now, certain teams, certain players are regularly in the news, in the media, being sent off, being booked for... how should we say, heavy-footed tackles. So
two-footed tackles, even.
Ah. I was so going to leave that line. yeah, so his point is more the people that are doing it all the time and the refs that are ignoring it and not showing yellow cards, as happened with De Jong's tackle. But I do think the media just has a bit of a let's be horrible to Mr. Wenger thing.
Manchester City for Arsenal. It's probably the big game if you're looking to rule the Premier League for this weekend.
It's the only game that doesn't look really crap.
Tottenham-Everton. Tottenham-Everton's probably all right.
Well, it's not really catching my imagination.
OK, though. Manchester City-Arsenal.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be more of a test for City than it will be for us. I think we're known for losing to the supposed big boys. So, you know, a lot of people won't expect us to do well. But if Man City want to be playing in the Champions League and in the top four, then they need to beat teams like us. I think it'll be very interesting to see how their defence copes with Wilshere, because they don't have much pace and he's quite nippy and he can take a tackle. So it'll be... Oh, he's not playing this week.
He's suspended.
Oh, we need to cut that out.
No chance.
Yes, you have to cut that out. Can't embarrass me on my first go.
Do you think it's one of those? Well, with Arsenal City, as you say, Arsenal haven't got a good reputation at the moment against the bigger teams. City obviously are in a very good form at the moment. Do you think this could be one where Arsenal come unstuck, or do you think there's a good chance that they actually might get a point or even better out of this?
Do you think City are in good form, or they've had a good run of games? Like Chelsea, are they in form or they had a good run of games? It's two completely different things.
That's good. I would say they're reasonably in form.
Compared to their form, not compared to Arsenal's. I just think they've had a good run of games. I don't think, you know, they haven't... I don't know. I just think they're not quite there yet. It's like half a house, isn't it? They need the roof. And they haven't quite got it built yet.
In terms of the title, Arsenal are still very much in with that. And we had on our pre-season predictions on twofootedtackle.com. Interestingly, neutral Terry DeFelin, who's a Palace fan, said that he thought Arsenal were going to win the league. Do you think that they can?
This is the first year I haven't said no straight away. So make of that what you will.
Okay. I maintain that I think Arsenal can win it next year. That's the year I think that they will.
Every year.
Yeah,
no, I didn't say it last year. This year, I think
we'll do very well in the Champions League this year. I think Shamak brings something to the team. You know, he's a physical player. He can hold the ball up, and he can actually score, which is always nice. And he scored in five Champions League matches in a row. He scored last night. So yeah, I'm very happy with him as well.
And you've got the Great Dane to come back as well.
Yeah.
I've missed him in his pink boots.
Chris has missed him as well. Chris made a lot of money.
Yeah. Apparently, he came back to train in the day Nike released some new pink boots, so make of that what you will.
I love Nick.
Have you seen his wife, though? She's loaded, and they're having a baby, so.
Who is his? I don't know anything.
She's
about
a lady.
I'd hope so.
Is she a lady from Denmark? Or someone very rich? Put it this way, she earns more than Yaya Toure, so she has more money than Yaya Toure.
Blimey.
Yeah, and she's like 30 odd and he's like 23. And having a baby, she's due in December.
Wow, I did not know that.
Did you really need to know that though?
No,
no.
I've seen pictures of the outside of her house.
Yeah. And it no, it's not a house,
incredible.
It's an estate.
Well, there you go. It's not often that I'm lost for words, but.
He's made me almost as much money.
What? To
by scoring goals at long odds.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Catherine, I asked Tasha as a neutral what she thought of Borough. Return the favour. What's your assessment as a neutral of Arsenal this season?
I've always liked Arsenal, so maybe I'm not such a neutral. I have seen them play in the Champions League this season, and it was nice to see a team that could string more than two passes together. I was very impressed with Wilshire. Very strong on the ball. Shamak, yeah, as well. It was nice to see him score a goal with his feet as well. He's a good player. I liked him. And I think Arshavin, we've not seen the best of him yet.
I think
this season.
He's a bit lazy. He's got this thing of, I'll play for 87 minutes and do nothing, and then there's this 3-minute spell where he does something spectacular and I love him again, but then...
Ah, the Kalou effect.
Yeah, and then he's like last week where he wasn't very good again, so...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I do think Arsenal are going to finish third, and I know that annoys Arsenal fans because people say that every year, but I really do think that's going to happen again this year. I can't see anybody taking it from Chelsea this year. But I agree, sort of maybe in 2 years, maybe not next year, I think Arsenal will be back up there, glory days again.
I wish I had money for every time someone said, maybe, maybe in this amount of time, I would be as rich as Bender's missus.
Well, I think that's a good point to wrap up the podcast. Just a few quick plugs before we do wrap up. Please go to justgiving.com/twofootedtackle to donate to our chosen charity, Cars at Risk in the Young. It's a very, very good cause. We're hoping to give them a Christmas present of £1,000. So please do go along, donate. There's more details on Two Footed Tackle as well. twofootedtackle.com/cry. If you want more details on our chosen charity. Twitter.com/twofootedtackle if you want to hurl football abuse at Chris, or actually be nice to Chris
nice.
As well. You can do both. Talk about tooting as well to Chris.
If you give me abuse, you better expect it back.
Well, the man's talking there. Facebook.com/twofootedtackle if you want to become a fan of the podcast and the site. Do visit www.twofootedtackle.com. There's some great stuff on there today. Causing a stir is Lara O'Reilly's piece on Arsenal's goalkeepers.
Yes, I saw that. A lot of comments.
A lot of comments indeed.
It's giving my post on Redknapp a run for its money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A storming debut from Lara on the website itself. Podcast@twofootedtackle.com. If you want to get in touch with your thoughts, feedback, any questions for the pod, that's the place to do it. So, remains for me to say thank you very much, Catherine.
Thank you.
Are you watching any football this weekend?
Oh, if I can bring myself to after this week, I might just be refreshing BBC Sport and seeing who else has been added to the list of possible managers.
Wonderful. Tasha, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great debut. Any football for you this weekend?
Obviously, Arsenal, Man City. I might place a few bets, but after last week, maybe I shouldn't.
Okay. Chris, thank you, as ever.
Cheers.
What are you up to this weekend?
I'm going to Godalming Town against Bognor.
Oh, storming. Absolutely brilliant. Love that.
Should be good.
Yeah. I'm off to Carshalton and Chelmsford this
fantastic.
Weekend. Really looking forward to that. FA Cup fourth
Carp
quarter
action.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going with Jamie Cutteridge, who will be on the pod next week, I believe.
Oh, Villapod.
Villapod. It's yeah. Okay. We've got Chris Applegate in to balance things out as well.
Another gooner.
Yay!
More for the Venn diagram. We'll have to get onto that. Anyway, thank you very much, dear listener. We'll be back same time next week or whenever you listen to the podcast, really. Thank you.
TwoFootedTackle.com.